Welcome back to Dark, Dangerous, and Deadly. It's me, Bridget. Today I have a story for you that was definitely something that was told to me and a lot of my other family members when we were growing up, kind of like a cautionary tale to always trust your gut. So let's go. So first, we're going to take you back to the 80s. Newark, New Jersey. And at this time, one of my family members was dating this man named Pedro, but everyone called him Pete. She was dating him, and he was slowly trying to get her away from the family. He was trying to kind of just keep her all to himself. He was very possessive. And a few people in the family saw this and they just wanted to give their opinion. You know, hey, you know, be careful. He seems like he's trying to get you away from everybody. And that's usually a bad sign. And I think she definitely felt this also, and she winds up, like, breaking it off with him. And he basically wasn't one of those people that was just going to accept that she didn't want to be with him. So he started, like, I guess basically, like, stalking her. He would show up wherever she was to try to get her to come back to him and everything. And eventually he would leave her alone, but it definitely took a while. So he winds up dating another girl, and her name is Denise. So him and Denise, they're dating. Oh, I'm sorry. And she has two kids, from my understanding. Now, Denise is important, and she was always talked about in my family because my uncle actually used to date her, and my uncle was absolutely head over heels in love with her. And, you know, for whatever reason, it just wasn't working out for them. And this is, you know, she winds up, I think she got married to someone else. She had children with him, and then it didn't work out with that guy, so she winds up getting with this guy, Pete. So you can tell it's a story that is definitely very close to everyone in the family. So Denise and Pete are dating, and he is obviously just as possessive as he was with my family member. And she was just really getting tired of, you know, his shit. And so she was, like, telling her, I guess, her sister, you know, that she was thinking of leaving and she just wasn't happy in the situation that she was in. And so then the sister is not hearing from her. No one's hearing from her. They're asking him, you know, like, have you heard from Denise? And he's basically like, no, I don't know. You know, I came home and she was gone. So obviously we know that that's not what really happened. So now they get a tip. Police get a tip from Pedro's cousin. And let's see. His name is Rafael. So Rafael tells the police, I believe he called the police, I guess on February 29th, 1988. He calls the police and he says that his cousin Pete, or Pedro, killed his girlfriend. And he says, you know, he basically is telling them exactly what happened. So this is where things get weird, right? because all of the research that I've done, Pedro, obviously, he's in jail. And I'll definitely post a picture of him because he will be getting out soon. So, Pedro and Rafael are basically trying to pin this on one another. So, Rafael says that Pedro had called him and he said that he needed a huge favor. So, Rafael was like, okay, like, right now?
Oh, excuse me.
Because it was at like, 10 o'clock at night. And he's like, yeah, I need you to take, like, I need to borrow your car. And Raphael's like, well, what do you need my car for? He's like, oh, I need to just go throw some things away. And so Raphael's like, no, you can just wait for the garbage company to come. So Pedro's like, no, I need to throw it away now. I can't wait. So Raphael's like, well, I won't let you use my car, but I'll go with you. So he's driving. He drives over to Pedro's house. Pedro goes in and he comes back and goes back in and comes back. And he does like two or three trips. And each time he's coming out of the house with big black garbage bags. So initially, I guess Rafael didn't think that it was that weird until he saw more and more garbage bags come. So he's asking him, like, what's in the garbage bags? Like, what is it that you're throwing away right now that can't wait and that you don't want to get rid of through the regular garbage company? He's like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, just, I don't, yeah, you know, like, let's not talk about it. So they start driving around Newark, and they're just kind of, like, Rafael would pull over, and then Pedro would get out, and he would take one of the garbage bags, and then, like, chuck it in a bush, and then drive another place, and, like, chuck it on the side of the road. And he was just dropping these bags everywhere. So now, while they're driving back now they're done. Rafael. Oh, sorry. Rafael is going to drop Pedro off at home. So Rafael's like, you know, they're just kind of making small talk. And Pedro's like, you know, that was Denise in the bag. And so Raphael's like, what do you mean that was Denise in the bags? He's like, well, I killed her. And then I stripped her naked, put her in the bathtub, and just chopped her up. And then I took all of the parts, put them in bags, and you just helped me drop them everywhere. So now you can see Raphael's in a tough position because he literally just helped dispose of a body. So now, what do you do when you're in that position? Do you go to the police? I mean, if there's not enough evidence against him, or if it was a lie, or, you know, there's could be tons of different things. Now that all goes back to you. So what do you do? I mean, in Raphael's position, he held on to the information for a while, and then he went and cleaned out the trunk in the car before he went to the police. Okay. Now this detail probably doesn't seem that important, but then you get to Pedro's story. And this is where things get a little weird. So Pedro says that he was home with Denise. And then they got into an argument and he decided that he was going to go to the bar. Now, this is a side note, but I just think that it's really intriguing. So this bar, it was called Golda's Bar. And for anyone in my family, Golda's Bar was kind of like Cheers. You know, like you go in there, literally everybody knows you. And it's not because you're always there drinking or anything like that. But the family that owned the bar was very close friends with my family. So you could go there as a kid, no judgments. But we did hang out there a lot. And we could walk in there and we would have whoever was working the bar that night pass us a soda or some snacks or something. And you could play darts there. And it was, I mean, obviously people are going to be like, oh, why were kids hanging in a bar? But like I said, it was a very different environment. It wasn't just drunk people everywhere. It was a little hangout for everybody, especially the people in my family. So when, you know, when you learn about something that, you know, someone that has visited that establishment that you kind of felt like was a home, you know, it's really weird. Like, it gives you like a very weird vibe. But yeah, I just figured I would throw that in there. So he goes to Golda's and he's knocking back a few drinks. And he actually met his cousin there, Raphael. Him and Raphael were there and they were having some drinks. Then Raphael goes home. And then Pedro goes home. So now when Pedro gets to the house, he sees Raphael coming out. And he's like, what are you doing in my house? And he's like, I need you to come in. I need you to come inside. So they go in the house and he sees Denise just laying there on the sofa with the bottom half of her pants. Like, her pants are off. And he thinks that she's like sleeping. And Raphael's like, she's dead. I killed her. And that like makes no sense, but that's what he says. And he says that Raphael is the one that took her in the bathroom. Raphael is the one that did all of those things, that it was Raphael that did it. And that he didn't want to say anything because Raphael was his cousin, which makes absolutely no sense. But now police start questioning her family. They start, you know, they obviously have to let them know the horrible news that they have been told that she is dead and that her body parts have been strewn about. So now the sister comes forward and she was like, you know, we were in the house that morning. I'm sorry. So this is the morning that, obviously before Denise was murdered, they were in Denise's sister's house. And Denise was just sitting there with the sister and Pedro walks in. He starts like screaming at Denise for something and he like grabs a kitchen knife and he like runs out the door. Which I don't know why. I don't know. Did he act like this normally? Or like, is this something that like they were used to seeing, that it wasn't like, hey, like there's something wrong, stay away from him? I don't really know. I'm not trying to say that like the victim was not a victim, but I'm just saying like was that not considered a red flag, or was this something that he did all the time? Because we know he was possessive, but was he also aggressive? Did he also beat her or anything like that? Like, we don't really know. And I tried to look into this case as much as possible. And the only court records that I could find were for his appeal, which, by the way, see, I should have brought the person's name up, but I could not find this information. I could not find it at all. So I had to go on, there's a crime group that I am a part of on Facebook. And I went on there and I was like, I need help. So I explained the case to them. And there was this one person, this woman, that like, she was a little sleuth and she was able to find out the information. And thankfully, She did, because I had the wrong name. I was calling him Pete, and that's why I couldn't find any information. His legal name is Pedro. So, yeah. So, thank you to that person. I completely forgot her name. Actually, I'm going to look it up. Okay, so the woman's name is Jennifer Orcutt, and she was able to help me out and find out all that information for me and send me all the links. So thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate it. Okay, so from what we know with all of these different stories going on is that Pedro killed her. I know that a few people were like very curious in my family as to the outcome of Rafael's testimony, and you know, just, I mean, he did help dispose of the body, even though he didn't know at the time that that's what he was doing, but he did help. And then he cleaned out his trunk. And that was, he did this before going to the police. Now, the thing that sticks out to me the most is that he cleaned the trunk before he went to police. And this sticks out to me because you planned on going to the police, right? So you planned on telling them what happened. Now, if you had nothing to hide, why did you clean out your trunk? Like, does that not strike anybody else as odd? If you see something here that I'm missing, please let me know, because I'm very curious on this. So let's get to the medical examiner. So this comes from law.justia.com, and it says, quote, "The medical examiner who conducted the autopsy stated that the cause of death was asphyxiation by strangulation. The body revealed small hemorrhages over the eyelids and face, as well as scars on the neck, which were compatible with fingernails. The victim had also suffered a stab wound to the left side of the chest. Although this wound entered the chest, it did not puncture her lung. The stab wound was also listed as a potential cause of death. The medical examiner offered his opinion that the victim died prior to being dismembered," unquote. Now, when they went, you know, when the investigators went to the house, they had found human flesh on the bedroom floor. They also found dried blood in different areas of the house. The back door jamb, and an area around the bathtub. Oh, the drain of the bathtub. So the drain of the bathtub had like a screen in it, and they tested that, and it tested positive for blood. They also took swabs from the trunk, and they also tested positive for blood. So, you know, obviously, all the evidence is in the house. And there's no argument with the two testimonies that the murder did take place in the house. But it's just the argument of who did it. And honestly, from reading all of it, it's not really definitive. Like, they don't say... So they do mention that she had markings on her neck from fingernails. But they don't ever test Rafael or Pedro, they don't test their fingernails. Which, like, it's kind of confuses me. Because when you have one person, like, two people that were both together, and they're both saying that each other did it, I mean, maybe Rafael had a little bit more of a role to play in this than he was letting on. Or that, I mean... Obviously, the investigators didn't believe that Rafael had did it, but what did they know that We don't know. And it's interesting because you, if this case was to be held today, I think it would be done a lot different. And I don't believe that it would have just been a slam dunk case and they would have said, you know what, it was definitely the boyfriend. All right, investigation over. I mean, it's obviously, it definitely seems like it was him because he does have a history of being possessive and, you know, but it just really seems very weird to me that Raphael just kind of was like, okay, thanks for your testimony and you get off scot-free. I don't believe that he should have. He held information from law enforcement. He cleaned up, well, attempted to clean up the trunk. He tried to get rid of evidence. So I definitely think that he should have done some time as well. But yeah. So on March 4th of 1988, Pedro was arrested. When he was arrested, he actually had a bruise around his eye and he had some like scratches on his shoulders or whatever. And he had like a small cut. He said that when he had gotten back home or when they had gotten to the argument, rather, that Denise tried to stab him. And that's when he left. But then he goes back, you know, eventually to say, well, that's why I killed her. Because I was defending myself. So, I mean, either way, he's a piece of shit. This lady was, like I said, she was loved by so many. My uncle loved her so much. And he was still in love with her until the day he died. And, you know, it's just, it's so terrible that this life was taken away because this asshole was just one of those assholes that is like, if I can't have you, no one can. And, you know, I mean, ladies, I guess some gentlemen, if you're in that position and you're with someone that is controlling and doesn't want you around your family, that's the kind of person that you need to get away from. And like I said, this was definitely always brought up as a cautionary tale and was always told to us as kids of, you know, my family member was able to be spared from this man. And when you really think about it, you know, this could have been her. And that's really scary. And I know that this is something that she's thought about plenty of times. And it really makes you think. You know, we always go over all of these cases. And I think a lot of times, even some of the podcasts that I listen to, sometimes I hear people telling these stories and it just feels like sometimes they forget that these are real people. And that's exactly why we tell these stories. At least that's why I do. And I know some other people that I listen to, or even people that I watch on YouTube, they tell the stories to give an awareness of the situation. And I think a lot of times we watch these shows and we listen to these podcasts, and sometimes we watch documentaries or even sometimes movies that are based on these real situations. But we separate ourselves from it and we forget sometimes that these are real situations. And I think this is one reason, this story itself is one reason that always keeps me grounded and always keeps me remembering that these are real people. Because like I said, the one thing that I always think about when I think about this case is I could be talking about my cousin. And it's just, it's really crazy to me to think that something like that could have happened to her. And thankfully, you know, she's still with us. And like I said, you know, Denise, she had kids. And I actually met them. I met them once. It was actually at my uncle's funeral. And I'll tell you, it was definitely a very crazy experience because they're such sweet people. And then to know the life that was ripped away from them. You know, that's their mother. That's just so horrible. And, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, hey, you know, nice to meet you. So how does it feel? You know, like, you don't ask those questions. That's probably something that they don't normally talk about. And it probably just eats away at them all the time. And it just makes me feel so horrible. Like, I would never be able to handle losing my mom. And I don't know how anyone deals with it. But yeah. So that's the story of Pedro Vasquez and how my lovely cousin was able to get away from him. But sadly, Denise wasn't. Now, one thing that I definitely want to mention before we head out is that, like I had mentioned earlier, Pedro Vasquez will be eligible for parole April 15th, 2023. Now, that's coming up. Not super soon, but it definitely is. And now, this man, I am definitely going to post the picture on, you know, on the Instagram and on the website. But you definitely need to see him. You definitely need to see him. You need to see, you know, his information. And I'm going to take, this is, I actually have the website for the Department of Corrections up. And I'm going to take a screenshot of the information that they have here and stuff. Because just as a reminder, if you see him, you know, in the future, it will remind my listeners that he is a murderer. Not only a murderer, he didn't just, you know, this is not someone, like I always say, there's different levels of murder. And, you know, some gangster that goes out and shoots somebody, yeah, they killed them, they're murderer, but someone that strangles somebody to death or someone that dismembers somebody, that's a whole nother level. That is very personal. And when you kill somebody and then chop them up into small pieces and dispose of their body, I mean, that's fucking sick. You're a whole nother level of sick. It's fucking gross. And I want to make sure that people know exactly what he looks like. And I'm hoping that he doesn't get paroled. I really don't. I really hope that he stays there for the rest of his life. But if he does get out, people need to know exactly what he looks like. And you need to know what he's about. Because this was the main reason that I covered this case, is because he's eligible for parole. And who knows, you know, maybe he found Jesus in jail, you know, like they all do. And he's completely fixed, you know, they fixed him while he was there. He's not a murdering psychopath anymore. He doesn't go around chopping people up. Whatever he has to say, whatever he has to make them believe, so that he can get out on parole. But someone like this, someone that is so possessive that they would kill their partner just so they couldn't be with anybody else, that person will do it again. They definitely will. And I, like, he has a dark soul. You can just see it from his eyes. Disgusting piece of shit. I hope he rots forever. But, like I said, in the event that he ever does get out, you guys are going to know exactly what he looks like so that you can keep an eye out and keep away from him. Thank you guys so much for listening again. I hope that you liked this. I hope that you will go over to the Instagram or to the website or Facebook and take a look at the picture. Keep it embedded in your mind. Share it with your family members so that they can stay away from him as well. Love you guys. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Bye.